Here's a question for you. We're going to have a fun little game to start with. How many of you would say I'm a risk taker? Anybody out there? Are you a risk taker? Yeah? Some of you say yes, yes. Raise your hands. I want to see in the room. You can go ahead and comment yes online. Okay, so a few of you. We're going to put this to the test this morning, okay? We're going to see, are you really a risk taker? So I'm not going to ask you to text in or do anything. You don't have to use the chat window if you're online. But I'm going to give you some scenarios, and then you have to decide which of the three options closest fits what you would normally do, how you would respond. And here's where it gets complicated, because you have to keep track of your score. Okay, and so if your option is A on every question, it's 1 point. If it's B, it's 2 points. If it's C, it's 3 points. We got that? So can you do that? All right, so here, we'll get started with a fun one, right? So here we go. You're running late, meeting some friends. The light ahead of you turns yellow. What do you do? Okay, what do you do? So let's put that one up. So you always stop at a yellow light no matter what. That's your A. No, that's 1 point. Oh, look, I don't even have ABC. I have 1, 2, 3 for your points. Break and stop at the light. You're late anyway. Or C, you blow through that sucker. Okay? All right, I see some threes going up in the air there that are very proud. So, yeah, exactly. Now, and I do want you to answer honestly. Don't say what you should do. I want to know what you actually did this morning on your way to church. Say, okay, second one. You got your answer on that one? Here's number two. Second one is, your friend gives you a hot stock tip telling you it's going to go through the roof next week. Do you hear this stuff all the time? No, it's not true, and do nothing. Do you nod, write it down to research it later, or do you take $5,000, that money you had for a rainy day, and you invest it? Which one would you do? All right. Oh, I see a little few more ones and twos there. Okay, when we talk about money, it's a little different. Your life blowing through a red light doesn't matter as much, evidently. I mean, I'm just observation here. Number three, you're at a friend's house for dinner. They offer you something you've never tried before. Do you politely decline? Do you eat a little, saying you're stuffed from all that water you just drank? Or do you go for it? Who wouldn't like a fried tarantula? It's actually, I went and Googled like weird foods you can eat, and fried tarantula was on the list. So how many of you would go 3 on that one? Okay. Those of you that have been overseas, you can be like, I've done it. I've sat down at a table. I had no idea what they were serving me. All right, here's the next one. Number 4. Your friend wants to set you up on a blind date. If you're married, imagine you're not for just a moment. What do you do? Do you, no way, not at all? Do you, might go, but I need to do a little bit more research, so I'm going to stalk them on social media. Or do you say, hey, sure, I love meeting new people. Anybody got some ones? I see some twos kind of going up in the room there. Okay. Here's another one. There's a flash airline ticket sale, and you can buy tickets somewhere really exotic, really cheap, but they're selling out fast. What do? Exotic places really aren't my thing, unless by exotic you mean Lake Okoboji. Number 2, maybe, but let me do some research first. Or number 3, I have already bought them. All right, I see some threes there. Very nice. Just a couple more. You're invited to a party. This is more the introvert extrovert question right here, where you're not going to know anybody. Do you politely decline, opting to stay home and watch Netflix? Do you go if you can bring someone? Or, of course I'm going, it's a party. What do we got out there? Okay, I see my introverts represent. Yes, all right. Here's, number 7, this is kind of crazy. You made a dinner several days ago, and there are still leftovers. What do? Do you chuck it? You can never risk those stomach issues. You do the sniff test and then decide, or you heat it to within an inch of its life. I have a father-in-law who would heat it to within an inch of his life about 2 months into the leftovers being in the fridge, because we don't throw anything away. All right, here's the last one. So here's your last one right here. Would you do a charity parachute jump? Are you nuts? Of course not. No, but I'll go watch Pastor Ryan do it and make a donation. 3, I'm already at the airport. Oh, man, I see a lot of threes out there. Wow. All right, so let's add up your score. Out of, let's see, what were there, 8 questions, 8 times 3, the maximum is 24, so you're somewhere between 8 and 24, right? So let's see, how many of you say you got 8 to 10? Anybody in 8 to 10 range? Oh, wow. So see, if you were 8 to 10, you are death warmed over. And the answer for that is you need to check your pulse. Are you even alive? What are you doing with your life? I can't believe you even risked taking this quiz. So yeah, there you go. So anybody 11 through 13? Okay, couple. There we go. You would be classified a nervous Nelly. Now come on, Nelly. It's time for you to step it up. You may want to be more adventurous, and I can see you're trying. Just try a little harder. How many of you would say 14 to 16? A few of you there, very good. You're the risk master general. You're in a nice range here. You know how to balance risk with reward. This is exactly where you want to be. You know how to have a good time, and you will be very successful. So see, there you go. 17 to 19. Wow, we've got some risk takers in this room. All right, you are a pusher. You like to push the envelope, and that's great. I just warn you to be careful. Scale it back. Risk is not always its own reward. Anybody over 20? Oh, wow. We got some over 20 folks. You have serious issues, and you should seek professional help. If you hadn't crashed and burned yet, you will soon. So that's my advice to you. It's a goofy little way to think about risk, isn't it? I don't know about you, but I think about risk in my own life. And no matter where you are on the scale, we know that even just living in life, you showing up to this worship service this morning in person for those that are here, going to the grocery store, that kind of carries a little more risk than it did 12 months ago. You know, life is just full of risk. But you know, sometimes when we think about faith, there's a problem. Because we take all that risk and we kind of don't associate it with faith all the time. We assume that faith means easy for some reason, and I'm not exactly sure why. But we know it doesn't mean perfection, but we think, oh, well, if I just follow Jesus, everything's okay, and I don't have to risk, and there's, you know, it's all good. We even have songs about this. There's a song that I remember the title. It's called Safe in the Arms of Jesus, and we think about stuff like that. And so when we think about faith, we kind of move to a place of non-risk. But is that the way faith is supposed to be? I mean, following Jesus, does it make sense because it's the safe choice? Now, I realize in our culture, maybe we look at that and we go, it might be. Maybe not as much today, but probably 50 years ago, absolutely. 50 years ago, if you moved to a new community, if you were trying to get established, you know one of the first things that you would do? You'd find a church. You wouldn't even question it. You know why? Because if you weren't in a church, if you weren't part of that group, this organization, people would probably never give you attention, give you the time of day, because how can you trust someone who doesn't go to church, right? And so church became, and faith kind of moved into this goofy, safe category, and we made the assumption that following Jesus is comfortable. And then, of course, we commercialized it, which made it even more comfortable. But is that really how it's supposed to be? Or is a life of faith meant to be a little riskier than that? I think it is. And that's what I want us to look at today. We're taking a look in our Unpause series, and today we're talking about just as we unpause our lives, take a risk. Take a risk, because that's where Jesus is. And so we're going to dive into that today. You know, the idea of following Jesus is, it's kind of a newer thing. And if you turn to the Bible, you would find that risk is basically from the opening chapters all the way to the end. Where you go back to the book of Genesis and you read even just about Abraham, who was called by God to step out of his comfort zone to go to a land that God would show him. He didn't even know where he was going yet. And God said, don't worry about it, just trust me and go and I'll show you. And Abraham packed up his stuff and he went. Moses out tending the sheep and sees the burning bush. We talked about that just a little bit last week. And God says, I want you to lead the Israelites out of Egypt into the promised land. And so Moses has to go before the world's most powerful leader and say, you're going to let God's people go. A little bit of risk tied to that, don't you think? We could talk about Elijah and battling the prophets of Baal. We could talk about Queen Esther, who put her life on the line for the people. We could talk about Nehemiah rebuilding the walls around Jerusalem. We could talk about Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, all standing firm in faith, and most of these facing death because of their faith in God, because of what God has called them to do. And it didn't end in the New Testament. I mean, even you think about the absurdity of here's this guy, this prophet, who's walking around, and he sees some guys that are fishing, and he's like, hey, follow me. And they're like, sure, why not? Leaving family, leaving business, leaving all the comforts that they had to follow the rabbi, the one who said, I'll show you great things, and they do it. And even, you know, most of these guys were martyred for their faith. Peter, Paul, jailed. Just the difficulty that they had. John exiled at the end. You see, I've got an expression I've recently started using. It's 2 points make a line, 3 points make a trend. And so as I look through the Bible and I start placing these points of what God has called and asked people to do, there's a solid trend here. And it's just simply this trend that God continues to act in the world. God speaks to his people, and then God wants us to step out in faith, to take a risk and to trust him. That this life of faith that we live, that for many of us is so comfortable, that is really a new thing, and that faith isn't supposed to be quite so comfortable all the time. Not only that, but when you look at this, you understand that all these people we've talked about in the Bible, we understand that this trend that we see is that you can't stay where you are and follow Jesus at the same time. That every time he spoke, he called to move people. And I'm not saying necessarily physically move, like pick up and leave, although it did happen for Abraham and several. But sometimes it's just you can't stay in the comfort zone where you are and follow Jesus because he's calling us to something amazing. And you know, even the idea of faith itself implies this, even though I think we forget it. Because when you go back and you look in like the book of Hebrews in the New Testament, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, and it makes this statement. It says, and without faith, it is impossible to please God. That is a bold statement. Without faith, it is impossible to please God because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek them. So there's this understanding we need to have that just living a comfortable faith may not be exactly what God has called us to, because then as we move over just a few verses earlier in Hebrews 11, we read that now faith is the confidence in what we hope for and the assurance about what we do not see. And in a world that values knowing where you're going and having a business plan for the next 5 years and seeing the logical steps along the way, faith provides a real challenge for us. Faith is a real challenge because here it says we're putting confidence in something that we can't see. It's like the old Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Any fans out there of those movies? Oh, absolutely. One of my favorite scenes in that movie is where he gets to the place. He's walking through the cave and he's getting to the Holy Grail. And it's that step of faith, right? You remember that part? It says you just have to step out. And he takes his foot and he steps on an invisible bridge. And that really is what we're talking about. It's that we see God's activity in the world. We see that he's moving, he's doing all these things, and he's even speaking to us in those moments of invitation, inviting you and inviting me to join him in what he's doing in the world. But then we have a choice. Then we have a decision to make. Because God doesn't force his hand. He doesn't force us to do things that we don't want to do. As I've said plenty of times, if God wanted robots, he'd have made robots. Instead, he wanted relationships, so he made us. And he speaks and he invites and he says, why don't you join me? But the problem is, a lot of times what God is calling to us and speaking to us to do makes no sense. Logically, humanly speaking, we go, yeah, I don't know how that's going to happen. I don't know how I'm supposed to do that. And yet, even then, we're called to take a step. There was a study years ago called Experiencing God. A lot of what we're talking about now is based on that. And the author of that book called this moment a crisis of belief. A crisis of belief. Because when God speaks and he invites you to move, if you've ever been there, you can feel that. You feel the tension of what humanly you know, what humanly you feel, what logically makes sense to you, and what God may be calling you to do. Sometimes they don't line up. But we need to understand that God doesn't reveal himself to us for us to turn a blind eye to what he's doing in the world, and he doesn't speak to us for us to ignore him. The reason God does this, it is so that we can join him in this world in what he is doing. But whatever he's calling you to do is going to be risky. It's going to require faith, that crisis of belief. Faith is inherently risky. Jesus, following him, if you've taken that first step, you've heard that call, and you say, you know what, I do want to follow Jesus, that's risky. Even Jesus himself in the gospel said, you know what, you don't build a tower without first counting the cost. For some reason in America, we so nationalized religion that we took this part out. And we made it comfortable and got the fire insurance that says, yeah, I'll just follow. And I just picture in my mind Jesus shaking his head going, that's, you guys are missing it. I'm calling you to bigger. I'm calling you to better. I want you to experience more. So here's what I want you to do just real quick. Think for a moment in your, has there been a time in your life where God's called you to something big and you responded either by stepping out in faith or maybe you didn't respond in faith and it's led to maybe some regret? Think about that for just a moment. Now here's the other question. Here was the convicting part for Brent to put this sermon together. As I started thinking about that question in my own life, do you know what happened? I went, well, it was a pretty big risk for the Clark family in 2007 to move to Iowa. And you know what? To be fair, in 2011, when Ashworth Church asked me to step in to be lead pastor, a job I never wanted and never thought I would do, and I looked and I said, yes. And those were significant moments in my life and in the life of my family. But you know my problem with it? That was 13 years ago, and that was 8 years ago. And I started thinking this week, where's the risk in my life now? And I'm not talking about us being crazy. I'm not talking about you being presumptuous, because let me just tell you, one of the things you need to know right up front is that if God hasn't spoken, if God hasn't called, don't do it. Because as we're going to look in Matthew chapter 14 and the story of Jesus and Peter in the water, the thing you have to hear is the voice of God that says, come. That is critical. I think far too often, sometimes Christians like to throw around, God told me, and spiritualize things that God's going, I didn't do that. I mean, let's just be real. And that's why here at this church, you don't hear us say that language a lot, because we are, when we speak it, you can be confident that we are confident we've heard that word. Matthew chapter 14, probably if you've been in church any time, familiar story, cool story. Jesus has fed the 5,000. 5,000 men, it says. That doesn't even count women and children. So probably 10,000 people have just been fed by 5 loaves and 2 fish. Miraculous things happening. Jesus tells his disciples, get in the boat, go across the lake. Go across the Sea of Galilee. I'll join you in a little bit. Jesus disperses the crowd. He goes off by himself. He retreats and he prays. And we read in this story that the winds were coming up on the boat. And what should have been, on a good day, an hour trip across the lake, they're into hour like 6, 7, 8, just struggling. The winds are just battering against them, and they're not making any progress. They're tired. They're exhausted. It's about 3 a.m. They're worn out. The Jewish people had this idea that at the deepest part of the Sea of Galilee, water was kind of seen as inherently evil. And that below the deepest part was a portal to the abyss where the demons lived. So as you can imagine, they've already got this preconceived superstitious idea about water and the lake, and they're fighting and they're tired. And all of a sudden they see this figure walking miles from the shore towards their boat. They're terrified. They say, oh, it's a ghost. And because of all this stuff that's floating around in their heads, of course they're terrified. And we read in Matthew 14, Jesus says, hey, it's I am. The Greek translation is a point back to the Old Testament where God said, I am. Hey guys, don't fear, I am. And Peter, my favorite guy, because I have so much in common with him, talk before you think. He says, if it's you, tell me to come. And Jesus doesn't chastise him. He doesn't rebuke him. He just says, come on. Come on. Get out of the boat. What would you have done in that moment? Because as you think about this story, you don't get 11 more people going, ooh, Jesus, what about me? What about me? Can I come? Nope, the other 11 are just like, he's going to drown. It's been good to know you, Peter. But Peter just, he said, it's Jesus. And I'm out. And we don't know how far Jesus was. We don't know how far Peter walked. But we know that something happened to Peter when he gets out there. It's that he takes his eyes off Jesus. And if he's like me, he's probably going, this is cool. Oh, wait, you can't walk on water. Ooh, where's all that wind coming from? Oh, my goodness, the waves, it's hitting my knees. And slowly, Peter begins to sink. Peter doesn't start doing this necessarily. He just looks up and he says, save me, Jesus. Jesus reaches out his hand and he lifts him up. And Jesus says to Peter, he says, Peter, why so little faith? Why so little faith? And what we don't get to see in the rest of the story, but we know it had to happen, is that Peter and Jesus walk back to the boat. We forget that part. We look at this story and we go, oh, Peter's impulsive and he got out of the boat. And then he sank because he took his eyes off Jesus. Stupid Peter. But you know what? Peter called out to Jesus. Jesus lifted him up and those two walked back to the boat together. You know, here's what I want you to understand about this. As I said before, number one, Peter gets out of the boat because Jesus says, come. There was a visible, an audible word to Peter. We said last week that God continues to speak to his people. He's continuing to speak to you. He's calling out to you to say, come, join me. But what we understand about faith is that when we see faith, it's that faith must be action. In fact, James, the brother of Jesus, in his book talks about this. He's like, show me your faith without your works, and I'll show you my faith by my works. Faith without works is dead. So when we think about what that crisis of belief, this faith that we're drawn to, we have to understand that it is action. It's stuff we do. It's not just stuff we believe, and there's a challenge for us because a lot of times in our culture, we equate faith with belief. We equate faith with creed, with doctrine, and believing the right things, and that's not the faith we find in the Bible. The faith in the Bible is action. It's putting into practice. You can say you believe anything you want. The moment I know you're serious about it is the moment I see you do something about it. Doesn't mean it wasn't there. It just means I can see it. And more importantly, you can see it. Not only is faith active, but because it's active, it means faith needs to be nurtured to grow. It's something that grows. And so, you know, for some reason in church world, we look at people that come to faith and we think that coming to faith is the end all, and it's not. Because if, as parents, if we have children and we never saw them start to sit up, and we never start to see them crawl, and we never start to see them walk, we'd be in the doctor's office right away to the first moment we thought something was wrong, and we'd be saying, something's wrong with my child. And yet sometimes in the church, we see people that came to faith 27 years ago and have never taken a step of faith since then. Why does that not concern us? And I don't mean that in a judgmental way. I just mean it in a realistic way. Faith is something that is to be exercised. It is something that is meant to grow. Not only that, it's lived out daily because it grows. And so, you know, sometimes it's not just a matter of all these big things. Sometimes it's little things. And so it needs exercise. And also that faith can be scary. Anybody taking a big risk and you get out of the boat and you're like, what have I just done? This is too big for me. Sometimes it's scary. And that's normal. That's natural. Because it may cost you time and money and comfort and plans and dreams. And when we don't know the outcome, when we can't see where that necessarily will lead us, we ought to be a little bit scared. And not only that, though, we also see that when you take that step of faith, sometimes and oftentimes you will stumble, just like Peter did. We will sink. But the question we have to answer is, what do you do when you stumble? Do you quit? Do you give up and walk away? Or do you turn towards God? Do you turn towards Jesus and allow him to lift you up and to continue on? You see, faith requires a decision, and it requires us to choose, am I going to continue to sit in the boat or am I going to get out? But I'll tell you, if you choose to sit in the boat, that's great. You have that option. 11 disciples did. But if you get out of the boat, it's going to change your life. Because think about in this story, and I encourage you to read it, Matthew chapter 14. The 11 saw what happened. They experienced it from a distance. And it says when Peter and Jesus got in the boat, they all worshiped Jesus saying, you are the Son of God. They had a moment. But I can tell you, they did not experience the way Peter did. Peter, I imagine, however old he was when he died, he was still thinking back and telling the story. Do you remember the day I got out of the boat? God is still calling people to get out of the boat. But there are things that are fighting against us that keep us from wanting to get out of the boat. You know what those are? It can be fear. It can be comfort. It's comfortable in the boat, isn't it? It's comfortable being in what you know. And we don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to do any of that stuff. We want to stay right where we are. The boat is safe and secure. And if we get out of the boat, we might fail. Things might have to change. It's the unknown. I might have to give up control because I can't control the waves. I can't control the wind. I can't even really control if I stay on top of this water. I have to trust Jesus for that. Author John Ortberg wrote a great book. It's called If You Want to Walk on Water, Get Out of the Boat. Perfect for this sermon. He says that Peter knew the shame of public failure because he did fail in front of his other friends. But Peter knew two other things as well. He knew the glory of walking on water, and he knew the glory of being lifted up by Jesus in a moment of desperate need. The others didn't experience any of this. They couldn't because they were still in the boat. And he makes this statement. He says, the worst failure isn't to sink in the waves. It's to never get out of the boat. You see, faith isn't built when we assimilate new information. And it really isn't fully formed with us just sitting in the cheap spectator seats watching it happen. Faith is built when we get in the game, get out of the boat, trust Jesus in what he's calling us to do. And Jesus is still looking for people who will take that risk, who will hear his voice and answer the call and step out on the waves. And one of the best reasons we have to get out of the boat is because Jesus is there. Let me say that again. The best reason we have to get out of the boat is because in that moment, Jesus isn't in the boat. Jesus is over there. So here's my question for you. As we've been talking about this over the weeks, have you been, had your eyes open? Have you been able to see, even in this crazy pandemic, COVID, politically divisive world that we live in, have you been able to see God moving? Have you been able to see even maybe in the small things where God is at work? What about listening? Have you been taking the time to just find the quiet, to turn off the television, to quiet the radio, wherever you may be, to just say, God, I want to hear from you. Speak to me. Because those two really are prerequisites to what we're talking about today. I'm not telling you go do something stupid, go do something crazy. What I'm telling you is if you see God moving in the world and you hear God speaking to you, what is God saying to you right now? What is your boat that you need to be getting out of? What is Jesus calling you to today? What risk is he calling you to? And maybe you sit here and you go, nothing. Great. Then we go back to square one. God, show me where you're working. God, open my ears to how you're speaking so that then I can hear you call and get out of the boat and follow you. The challenge of this message is that faith is action, and faith is inherently risky. Following Jesus is risky. He calls us to live counterculturally. He calls us to something beyond the system and the values that the world currently lives in. And the only way we can do that is to take that step of faith and to risk, to take the risk and say, it's worth it. You see, if we're always so comfortable in the boat and we don't see what Jesus is offering on the other side, we'll stay in the boat. But I don't know about you. I'm ready to walk on water again.